Money Show with Bruce Whitfield on 702 for the curious on 92.7 and 106 FM.
The Money Show is brought to you by Nedbank. Looking at money from every angle leads to better money decisions. See money differently. Nedbank. Welcome to The Money Show this evening. We need to talk carbon tax. It comes into force next week and it will have a permanent impact on the amount of money in your pocket. It'll absorb, for now, 15 cents for every litre of petrol or diesel that you buy. And it's no doubt one of those taxes that government will feel perfectly within its rights to simply increase on an annual basis. So watch this space. We'll talk to Dr. Azhar Jameen about that this evening. We'll also talk about Mr. Price's decision to exit Australia. It's not the first South African retailer to go and get a blood nose in Australia. It'll spark a conversation around Woolworths and what its strategy is in Australia and why it keeps throwing good money after bad. And many other retailers that have gone and failed in Australia. And sometimes you just have to cut your losses when you know that you're beat. And exporting a South African concept into new markets is hard. It's very hard. There's one former banker who once said to me, when anybody in their business came to them and said, you know, I think we should open up a branch here or there, the first question to that individual was, so why do you want to go and live in Vietnam or Hong Kong or wherever it might be? And that was usually the question. And so often, these companies that do global expansions, not all of them, but so often, the motivation can be quite selfish on behalf of executives who want to get some global exposure for themselves. It's not necessarily in the best interest of the company, but they make an argument for it, and sometimes executive teams and boards fall for it. Well, I don't know what the motivation was behind Mr. Price's desire to diversify into Australia, but that diversification came to an end earlier on today.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield. Live. Online. Smartphones. DSTV. And 92.7. And 106 FM.
40 minutes from now, I will have 4,000 Rand to give to you if you're the whiz of the Brutal Biz Quiz. I'll be asking you questions from The Money Show from the week that has been. And if you've been paying attention and taking notes and diligently listening to the podcast immediately after the show, then you'll be well prepared to answer the Brutal Biz Quiz questions this evening. So that's all coming up in the next 40 minutes or so, courtesy of 702 Cape Talk and Altron, there when it matters. And yes, we'll play that game coming up just a little bit, in about 40 minutes or so.
Bruce Whitfield on 702. Call Bruce on 011-883-0702.
Two remarkable things about a tweet from 10 Downing Street today, the home and the office of the British Prime Minister. The first remarkable thing was that it had nothing to do with Brexit. And that was a positive thing. It was really good. The second was that as of 3:12 p.m. today, the UK had gone for 2 weeks without using coal for energy. They want to phase out coal by 2025. And I wonder even if by 2025, Medupi and Kusile will even be 100% operational by then. It's slightly cynical, perhaps, but they are so overdue and over budget. It's no laughing matter. Dr. Azhar Jameen, Chief Economist at Econometrics. And it looks like the surge in the rand today, the drop in the oil price below $65 a barrel, is going to come too late to give us any sort of respite next week, Azhar. It looks like petrol is going to be flat and diesel will go up on Wednesday.
That is correct, but let's be glad that petrol will not be increasing for the first time in 5 months, or increasing materially for the first time in 5 months. And one needs to bear in mind that around this time last year, it was going up quite rapidly. So from a point of view of the impact on the year-on-year inflation rate, it will really be, we will see a fall in inflation on a year-on-year basis from petrol in the month of June.
Okay, so that's a little piece of good news, but we still are paying record prices for petrol and for diesel.
Bruce, we are not actually.
Are we not?
No, they were higher in September, October last year.
Well, my short attention span is being corrected. Thank you very much, Azhar. But, I mean, it feels like we're headed very close to that level with the inclusion of additional taxes.
Sure.
Because when
sure.
you add taxes into the base of the petrol price, it creates a new base from which the fuel price moves. And with this new carbon tax, it is, over time, will be increased and add to the burden on South African households.
You're absolutely correct. I'm very sorry about is they should have rather just lumbered the petrol price with the full impact of the carbon tax rather than spreading it out across all sorts of industries where the effect will filter down through to the consumer and to the producer, to industry, far more aggressively than would have been the case simply by increasing the fuel price by still more as an environmentally friendly measure. You've got to bear in mind that studies have shown that the most of the pollution proportionately is created by engines, by automotive engines, rather than by industry as a whole.
Well, I mean, what effect do carbon taxes have on reducing our usage of motor cars? I mean, we simply absorb the additional cost and we keep on driving. It doesn't amend our behavior. It doesn't change the way we behave, I don't think.
I think the higher that the fuel price is, the more inclined people are to think about whether they should make a trip or not. And that reduces their fuel consumption and therefore produces less pollution in the economy.
Does this money get channeled into green projects? Does this money get channeled into the green economy? Or does it simply, like every other tax on fuel, go into the fiscus for the National Treasury to determine where the money should be apportioned at any one time?
I totally agree with your cynicism, Bruce. The problem with all these taxes is they simply go into this pot called Treasury, and much of that has been lost through very poor revenue collection and corruption in recent years. But hopefully it might be used more effectively under the most recent regime change that we've had.
I mean, I think a lot of people would be able to stomach it if it was going to go directly to fighting global warming, but it's unlikely to do exactly that. We've also got other massive emitters. I mean, the Eskoms, the Sasols of the world, the coal-burning pollutants. I mean, in Mpumalanga, areas where these large companies have got massive plants are, by scientists are telling us, are more polluted than the rest of South Africa. Are we taxing the right stuff? Are we targeting this carbon tax in the correct way?
No, that is precisely where I believe that we should have introduced it in a different way. And I believe having it, lumbering it on the fuel price would have been a far more effective way than, you know, now it's going to be felt by Eskom. Eskom's costs are going to be increased enormously, and that's going to filter through into all sorts of industries and increase the cost to the consumer proportionately more than is the case with, you know, fuel used in cars. At least with fuel used in cars, the consumer would have the option of driving a little less and organizing his life in a different way.
Dr. Zarjameen, thank you very much for coming through for us this evening, the chief economist at Econometrics tonight. I'm deeply cynical about this 15 cents a litre extra on the base price of South African petrol. Already a large portion of the fuel cost in South Africa is made up of a whole smorgasbord of taxes and charges and fees. And it is an efficient way for government to collect money. I mean, they should never have tried the e-tolls in Gauteng. They should just have lumped a couple of cents a litre onto the petrol price, and there would have been less of a fight over that, and Gauteng's roads would be better off as a result, and we wouldn't have had to build those expensive gantries and do all those sorts of things. Tax policy is a thorny issue. It affects you in your back pocket. It's going to take more money out of your back pocket. And so instead of seeing a 15 cents a litre decrease in the petrol price next month, which is tomorrow, so Wednesday's fuel price decrease, you're going to see no increase on petrol, maybe a 1 or 2 cents a litre relief on petrol. But the diesel price will go by 19 cents a litre. A big chunk of that is as a result of this.
The Money Show.
The Markets.
Gary McNamara, he is with Sunland Private Wealth, is our market commentator this evening. Now, Mr. Price becomes the latest South African retailer to return home from Australia, battered, bruised and bowed, Gary.
Well, I don't think they're too bad if you compare their compatriots Woolworths, where they're still digging a hole there. They're coming back in their latest financial, saying that they don't feel it's going to be a serious financial impact in the next reporting year. So I think they pulled out a little bit before they dug a big hole there.
And that's what's so important. I mean, it's all well and good to go and explore new territories, and Mr. Price have tried in Chile. I think they were there in 2003 and they opened 6 stores and then bailed. And this was even smaller. I think there were 3 Mr. Price clothing stores and 1 home store. They tried the market, they tested it, they went to go and see whether or not they could make it work. And on the basis of the fact that it was just going to take too much money and too much time and they might not succeed anyway, they've pulled the plug, which is the sensible thing to do, I guess.
Couldn't agree with you more, Bruce, and I think that's a leaf that a lot of the corporates in South Africa need to take out of what Mr. Price has done. It's a slow thing. If it doesn't work, pull out. You don't lose the family jewels, and I think it's a credit to the management team. And you saw it in the results today. I didn't think it was a bad set of results in a tough economic environment, and I think the market liked it. It has been quite heavily oversold year to date, as has most of the retail sector, but they're up 11%, and I think that's a huge credit to the management and making these tough decisions, although they weren't too committed at this stage, as you say, the right thing to do.
Yeah, I mean, Woolworths is at the opposite end of the spectrum, and it went and made a massive acquisition of a department store called David Jones in Australia. It had had some success, I think, with imports of Country Road and Trenery and other clothing lines into South Africa, and decided to go and invest big in Australia, and continues to count the cost of that decision.
Absolutely, in the billions, correct.
Yeah, and lots of companies have done it, though. I mean, these aren't. This isn't unique to retail, and it's not unique to Australia, but Australia seems to have been the sort of the death zone for so many South African companies that have gone there. A few have succeeded, and a few have done quite well, but so many South African companies over the last 20, 25 years, maybe it's the desire of executives to go and live in Australia, whatever it might be, but they go there generally thinking it's a lot like here, and burn themselves and their shareholders.
Well, I heard a famous quote by a well-known CEO who once said, he also pulled out of Australia, he says the only thing South Africa and Australia have got in common from a retail market point of view is they both speak English, but it's completely different to the South African market, very geographically diverse, and the population numbers are half of what we are from that side, so it's got a lot of different structures to it relative to the South African market.
We've seen Break come out with increasingly worse numbers, and that is the New Look business in the United Kingdom, which it bought and has written down the value of that altogether, looking for a turnaround in the UK. Famous brands beginning to see some recovery in Gourmet Burger Kitchen. So many companies, again, that market attractive to many South African executives, turned out to be a real lemon.
Absolutely. If you look at something like Famous Brands, that their strength in the South African market was the vertical integration. They had the serviettes, they manufactured it, they had the food producers, everything lined up, and they had a number of brands on the outlet distribution. Now they go to the UK and they don't have that infrastructure. You've got to get serious volumes through to benefit from that value integration. So they went there with a game plan that was completely different to what the South African market and what they were very good at. And again, they burnt a lot of money over there. And, you know, it's still very difficult to see how they're going to get it right.
Yeah, it is. Tongaat has been naughty, and they've had to restate their results. They have got a balance sheet that was overinflated with valuations that weren't necessarily reflective of Tongaat's reality, and it's a 4.5 billion rand restatement. This isn't Steinhoff-sized stuff, but still, it's not at all positive for Tongaat.
No, for a business with the history of Tongaat and the legacy, it's just shocking the way. The flippancy of how we can just restate financials, it's a huge indictment on the auditing fraternity. And I think for CEOs in South Africa, you know, we've got to be credible. And how, when we put financials out, they've got to be trustworthy. If you don't have trustworthy financials, it's a huge problem. I know sugar industry is very tough market. The property market's a little bit more tough, but they had very good times in the property markets in previous years. And I think you've just got to be very careful of getting ahead of yourself. And Tongaat's just, unfortunately, a very, very poor case of corporate governance, both from an auditing and a management point of view.
Yeah, but there's quite a lot of that going around. I mean, you know, for so many South African companies, and we've talked about this quite a lot on the show, I hope nobody's bored with it, but it's just high-paid CEOs, high-paid executive teams, well-remunerated boards, one of the world's most robust governance codes in the King 4 code, and yet still these guys are getting one past the goalie far too often.
Absolutely, Bruce. And, you know, I guess the more cynical in me says there's a potentially conflict of interest because they get – a free option with some of these big acquisitions, if I'm using that as an example, on the offshore markets. And if it doesn't work, they resign, they walk off. But the shareholders get left with the problems that they took a bet on. And I just think there's a more cynical view that it's just a one-way bet for a lot of these guys. And I think, as you say, the South African market, unfortunately, particularly in the last year or 2 years, going back to Steinhoff's, littered with them from that side. And we had a very good reputation with management going back 5 or 6 years. And the auditing fraternity was very highly regarded in the global context from a South African point of view. And unfortunately, the last 2 or 3 years have really undone a lot of that huge credibility that we did have.
It's undermined it dramatically. Overall, the JSE, though, held up very well relative to the rest of the world's markets. The currency strengthened on the day. We were buoyed by some stronger commodity prices. Gold and platinum were up, and we've seen the iron ore price really solid in recent months. Oil prices under huge pressure, down to $64.70 this evening. So a lot of things are going South Africa's way right now, bizarre as that might seem.
Yeah, and interestingly, during the week, we actually saw quite a nice rally from about the middle of the week with the appointment of the cabinet. I don't know if it had anything to do with it, but quite a nice rally in particular the financial sector, which you could classify as SA Incorporated. They had a very nice rally into the close of the week, but as a month it was fairly tough. You know, over 5% down on the all share over the month. We were probably a little bit full coming into the end of April, where the market was up about 12%. So, you know, the trade wars between China and America have certainly had an impact on this market, and today wasn't too bad. I think we'd probably taken some, but as a month, it was still a very, very tough month from that point of view.
What's one of the world's oldest sayings about the month that is just coming to an end?
What's it?
Sell in May and go away. And probably for the first time in 5 years, it was true. And with the market down, what, 12% during the month of May, it's basically eradicated all the hard work of the first quarter.
Well, not quite as bad as that. I think the all share was down just over 5%. We're still up about 6% for the year to date. But bearing in mind, that comes off a reasonably weak base of 2018. So we probably do need a stronger rally into the second half of the year, and hopefully a lot of that comes from some South African incorporated stocks that have really been hard hit at the moment. But I think one of the things that really going to have to be settled is this trade war between America and China, and it's getting very unsettling for the market. And it's like an old African proverb where they say two elephants are fighting, the grass gets hurt, and I feel like a bit of a piece of kukuyu that hasn't been watered for a while. So it's had a massive impact on the market. It was probably looking for an excuse to pull back, but it's been very uncertain over the last month, particularly on the trade wars.
Yeah, the trade war stuff is causing havoc, but that trade war also has got a nice benefit for us in that the oil price comes under some pressure, and that's below $65 a barrel. It's not going to help us next week, but it may help us in the months ahead. And the rand also, suddenly this afternoon, somebody went, I think we should buy some rands, and it started strengthening.
Yeah, I agree, Bruce. You know, the rand's been quite heavily oversold on what they call the risk-off people. Going back into US Treasury, we've seen very strong rally in their yield on their longer bonds. And the rand generally gets quite heavily sold off into these weaker market returns. But it's quite encouraging to see them coming off their base, because we still feel it's probably quite heavily oversold at these levels. You know, a fairer rate for the rand would probably be about 13.20. But we've got this uncertainty politically, and with economic growth and rating agencies, we've got a bit of a weaker premium in the rand. But it's encouraging that certainly today we had a nice rally in the rand.
Gary McNamara, thank you very much. Gary is a portfolio manager at Sanlam Private Wealth, and he joins us on a regular basis to take us through activity on markets. And just to give you a quick summary of what markets did today, because it was interesting to see that nice bounce in the currency toward the close of trade. The gold price moved as much as $1,300 an ounce. Platinum's also recovered a little, and the oil price has fallen to below $65 a barrel, down to $64.70. And that was very good for gold shares today. They were up about 8%, and we saw rand hedges like AB InBev and Glencore and Mondi and Sasol and Kumba all come under quite a lot of pressure on this Friday afternoon. But yeah, could have been a lot worse. Global markets have been hit much harder today as a result of those tensions between the United States and China over trade.
The Money Show is brought to you by Nedbank. Looking at money from every angle leads to better money decisions. See money differently. Nedbank.
bring you some of the best bits of the Money Show in a couple of minutes time, and we will play the Brutal Biz Quiz. I've got lots of lovely, juicy, quite awkward questions for you this evening, but you're going to have to be in it to win it. You're going to have to work really hard, and you're going to have to be very quick. It's not a team sport. This is not the Cricket World Cup. There are not 11 of you allowed, or even 2 of you allowed. If we hear a second voice going, that's called cheating. It's like cribbing your exams. It's like taking a little piece of folded paper up into your matric exams and getting caught. What would have happened to you then? You would have been expelled. So we'd have to expel you from the Money Show. 4,000 Rand up for grabs coming up in a bit here on the Money Show. On your next Money Show, the Standard Chartered economist Razia Khan will review The State Strikes Back. It's a fabulous book about economic reform in China and the end of economic reform in China in our business book feature. Also, join me for Stock Pick Monday with Owen Nkomo from Nkunzi Investments. And with commodities behaving the way they are and currencies behaving the way they are and markets behaving the way they are, there's lots more to talk about.
Bruce Whitfield on 702.
Well, this week was a big week for South Africa. It was the week in which the president finally announced a cabinet, a trimmed-down cabinet. I wouldn't go as far as to say a slimmed-down cabinet, but certainly he did trim some of the fat. Still huge compared with other countries' executives. He also mentioned, rather promised perhaps, that the performance administered would be closely monitored, but Jason, he said that too. He did please, though, some economists, and Citibank's Gina Schumann was pretty positive about this week's cabinet announcement.
That was identified as a positive, but then of course there are always cynical views that say that every president says that. But you know, we do like to think that Ramaphosa and Jacob Zuma are quite different in character. And if we are going to hang our hat on any bit of hope that Ramaphosa can bring to this country, we like to think that he will hold some of these ministers, or at least whoever needs to be held accountable. But again, time will tell. You know, we will have to use our own persuasion in the country in order to identify that if ministers don't perform, they absolutely cannot stay in power. And may I just add that that is part of the problem with the shuffle or the changes we saw last night, is that while in one way it's comforting to see some of the old names remain, they're familiar, and it's a bit of a relief because too many changes, too many unknowns often creates uncertainty. However, these familiar names also have to show now that they really have to perform. Because while some of them might be quite likable, it's still quite questionable as to what they have actually done in government over the last 5 years.
Still too big and unwieldy. I was talking to a former chief executive today who said they had 14 reports when they were running their business, and that was the absolute maximum that they could handle. And with the president having twice that number, it does suggest that there's an inefficiency gap within government, and maybe that's a piece of slack that the deputy president could pick up on. Any concerns around the role of the deputy president, the fact that Didi Mabuza, not universally popular in investment markets, is still in the mix?
There are some concerns. I'm not sure how well placed they are because, you know, in some ways he was always deputy and that never changed. But we had that kindle of hope that trickled through the markets through the last week that suggested that maybe he won't be deputy president. So maybe the expectations were just thrown around a little bit. But in the end, there hasn't been much said about Mabuza. If anything, the key points from the cabinet have been somewhat to the names, but mostly to the size. And now people are just wondering whether this cabinet is going to be more capable, because capabilities is what you need for economic reform.
Gina Schumann at Citibank, and she advises global investors on their thinking around South Africa. It's a critical job. Inside this week into the investigations into the VBS looting saga, the Prasair locomotives fraud, as well as lots of other high-profile cases of fraud and looting in South Africa. It was great to get Bernard Hotz, the head of business crimes and investigations at Worksmans, to tell us about the next steps in these cases. Lots of people very despondent about the fact that there's an awful lot of noise, an awful lot of hot air being spoken at commissions, and very few signals of arrests and possible prosecutions. And what Bernard Hobbs was telling us, that he was in full agreement that the drama we see playing out on our TV screens at these commissions is depressing.
It is appalling, but it's also wonderful to actually for once hear people sitting and telling their story, and it is horrific. The problem that we face is that If you just take, for instance, the Zondo Commission, what's coming out there, it is huge. It spans years. It spans a number of people, a number of entities. How does one deal with this? How does law enforcement deal with this in the NPA? So if one has regard to what the president said and what the new NDPP said about using the opportunity to partner with private in order to ensure that there's consequence for people who've done wrong. You can't believe, as a lawyer, for instance, if one bears in mind the commission is a civil process, a prosecution of an individual is a criminal process. As we know in the Constitution, you presume to be innocent until proven guilty. What you also have to bear in mind in a criminal prosecution is you have to prove somebody's guilt beyond reasonable doubt. So you can't believe that somebody who sits in a commission on day one and tells his story, that story the very next day could be handed to the prosecution and say, go and arrest that person, prosecute him or her, and put him in jail the next day. There's a process. It has to, notwithstanding how atrocious these things are that we're hearing, once it's handed to law enforcement actually has to investigate it. They have to join all the dots, and they then have to give it to the prosecution, who in turn have to satisfy themselves that the evidence all stacks up and that they can prove the person's guilt beyond reasonable doubt. So I guess what I'm saying, Bruce, is we have to exercise a degree of patience. As long as we have confidence in the NPA, as long as we have confidence in law enforcement, and as long as people are partnering together to ensure that there will be consequence, I'm feeling positive that we can achieve.
Bernard Hotz, who is with the Business Crimes Division Investigations at Worksmans. Our personal finance feature every week, we have Warren Ingram. And Warren had a bee in his bonnet. And can you have a bee in your bonnet and jump on a soapbox? I think you can, because he did both. And he then went on a bit of a rant. And it was an interesting rant. So interesting and so rare that we thought we would share it with you again this evening about his frustration with the way in which company chief executives deal and feel about regulations and the impact it has on investments.
And I was talking to a CEO of a smaller listed company this last week, and he was saying to me, I'm going to do everything I can to delist my business because I'm sitting here and I'm, you know, in my 60s, and every few weeks I've got a 25, 30 year old, you know, analyst, you know, asking me when I'm going to retire. What's my succession plan? And he said all of those things are in place, but because of an age issue, they believe I should step aside. And he said the board and my succession plan and my executives all want me to stay for as long as I'm healthy and on the go. And the corporate governance culture that we've got in this country is working against me. And he says, it's just unpleasant. And he said, I would like to be the executive chairman. I'd like to work shorter hours, but keep my experience, help my new CEO get on board. But he said, that's just not acceptable in this country. And I wonder how many CEOs, good ones, not the bad ones, they are bad ones, but how many good CEOs would take that same offer? And I just feel, you know, too many lawyers, too many accountants on the boards, they need to go, and we need the industry people back in again. And I would say the same thing as my last little soapbox thing to whoever takes on running the generation business at Eskom. Please get someone who actually understands running power plants, who when they walk into a power plant can look around and almost smell that there is a problem here. Don't get a great retired banker or, you know, I mean, they might figure out the financials, but they've got an operational problem there. Why don't we get operational people to run it?
Warren Ingram on fire last night. He really was. And, you know, talk about the value of investments. And if you can't trust the process by which shares are bought and companies are run, then you start questioning that. And that ultimately is bad news for investments. Well, the well-known chef, Ruben Riffel, of Ruben's fame, was our Make Money Monday special edition guest. And he was talking all about his upbringing, tending the home garden, being a terrible waiter, and finally launching his own restaurant chains. And I asked him if he has performance anxiety when he has to cook for friends at home.
I don't know, Bruce. I think the older you get, the more simple things get, I suppose. And that's how it is for me. I mean, I think we're lucky nowadays, especially in South Africa, the quality of our ingredients are just amazing. Yeah. So, you know, we just don't need to do too much to it. And I'd like to think that people enjoy my company instead of me standing behind the stove all night.
Yeah, you keep telling yourself that, and I'm sure everyone would be... But the idea of saving and investing, I mean, do you put money aside for a rainy day, or do you put money into investments because you might need it to for the next expansion of Empire? How do you save?
Yeah, we do put money away. You know, we've got a few small investments. I think over the years, what helped for me was a few property investments, and I think we sometimes still look at that. That's been, I mean, the best for us so far, and that's how I was able to sort of build my, you know, my own restaurant in Franschhoek. You know, at the moment, that works for us, and I think we're still sticking to that.
Don't call him celebrity chef. You can call him famous, you can call him well-known, you can call him well-liked, you can call him good chef, you can call him competent chef, you can call him chef extraordinaire. Just don't call him celebrity chef. Celebrities are other kinds of people, but not chefs. Yes, and that's Ruben Riffel, a great interview and a great discussion around money, his attitude towards money, and why he feels about it the way he does. Brutal Biz Quiz time. Are we ready for the Brutal Biz Quiz? I think we should be ready for the Brutal Biz Quiz. All you have to do is give us a call on 021-446-0567 or 011-883-0702. That's the first step. Then we have to answer the phone. And then you must answer questions. And I will put those questions to you like Barry Roo. And you, some of them you will get right and some you may get wrong. And then you get gonged out and make way for somebody else to become the whiz of the Brutal Biz Quiz. Because courtesy of Ultron, we've got, beg your pardon, we've got 4,000 Rand. Choking up with emotion and happiness and pride that we've got all this money to give you. But you have to be called the whiz of the Brutal Biz Quiz in order to win it. So I would like to know from you, please, which company used to be called Star? That is your first question to tonight's Brutal Biz Quiz.
The Money Show is brought to you by Nedbank. Looking at money from every angle leads to better money decisions. See money differently. Nedbank. The Money Show.
The Brutal Biz Quiz.
Time for that Brutal Biz Quiz with Altron this evening. 4,000 Rand in cash, courtesy of 702 Cape Talk and Altron. Altron, there when it matters. Let us play Brutal Biz Quiz tonight. Which company was known as Star? Let's go to Pindile this evening. Hello, Pindile. Which company was known as Star?
Hi, I believe it's the International Star Register.
I'm afraid not, Pindile. Nice try, though. Daniel?
Evening, Bruce. I think it's Pepco.
Pepco, absolutely right. And what did STAR stand for?
It's STAR North Africa Retail, I think it was.
Absolutely right. And what percentage of Pepco is owned by Steinhoff?
It's about 80 less... started off at 80, maybe it's 70 now.
I'm making up questions as I go along. Those aren't on my list. I'm just seeing how far I can push you on Steinhoff. But you've been paying attention,
Daniel.
Yeah,
I was going to ask if these counted. Are these counting?
No, I wouldn't have counted. I was just having fun at your expense. I spoke to the chief executive, Leon Lorenz, on Wednesday about the group's results, and they're fine. They're still fighting Techie Town, the Techie Town fight, and it's still lots of drama to play out there. In which province does the South African National Blood Service not operate?
This would have to be a guess. I used to audit that business. I don't know, Bruce, I'm going to guess Northern Cape.
You know, Daniel, you're wrong. But, you know, I now understand what went wrong with KPMG. Auditors guessing. You're not supposed to guess. Daniel, you were very good on Steinhoff, not so good on blood, I'm afraid. But thank you for playing, Daniel, this evening on The Money Show. So, yes, in which province does the South African National Blood Service not operate? Duncan?
I'm going to guess Northern Cape.
You can't guess the same thing as the guy who got it wrong the last time, Duncan. That's not a good strategy. Not a good strategy. So we know it's not the Northern Cape. All right, you've got eight more to choose from. This could be a long show. Robbie?
Northwest.
No, I'll call you John. I'm afraid not, Robbie. John Robbie. It's just like a Tourette's thing on my part. Robbie, no. So we know it's not the Northern Cape and we know it's not Northwest. There is a province, however, in South Africa where the South African National Blood Service does not operate. Let's try Philip.
Hello, it's Western Cape.
It is Western Cape. This week,
the I'm a blood donor. I can't link my donations from Joburg to my donations in the Western Cape.
Oh, really? So there's no tie-up at all? They won't count?
No.
Oh.
No.
Do you know why there's no? I mean, I think the chief executive of the blood service has explained this to us, but I've forgotten the reason. It does seem a bit silly. But yes, now this week, the National Blood Service and the Western Cape Blood Service came together at the Northeastern Radio Flyers in Sandton to showcase how they intend to save more lives using drone technology. So they are cooperating a bit. What do, Philip, what do Rob Davies, Susan Shubangu, Jeff Khadebe, and Derek Honeycomb all have in common?
They're all now no longer ministers.
Very good. Very good, Philip. Very good. Yes, 14 politicians who served under the previous cabinet did not get a call to serve under President Cyril Ramaphosa when he announced his new executive on Wednesday evening. Who will be the new chairperson of the Public Investment Corporation?
The Money Show.
The Brutal Biz Quiz.
We need a whiz of the Biz Quiz, and I need to give away 4,000 rand. Otherwise, I've got to take it home with me and spend it this weekend, and that would make me feel bad. So I want to give it to you. Let's see whether or not Robert. Oh, first time. First time. Fresh meat, Robert. Okay, fresh meat, Robert. Who will be the new chairperson of the Public Investment Corporation?
The new chairperson is the new Deputy Minister of Finance, Dr. David Mafando.
I think that's enough detail. Thank you. That's enough detail, Robert. That's enough detail. Dr. David Masondo. Yes, and he'll assume that role as chair of the Public Investment Corporation. Good luck with that, Minister. Who adds a sauce called Shito from Ghana to his beef stew?
Please repeat the question, Bruce.
Who adds a sauce called Shito from Ghana to his beef stew? This is a guy who is not a professional chef by any stretch of the imagination. He has other strengths. He has other gifts. Cooking is a passion, it would seem. He has been showing off those skills on social media while waiting for an important phone call this week.
Will this be a Ghanaian or South African?
You see, Robert, I know it's your first time and I should be nicer to you, but I can't be. Because I can't give you clues. It's not the Be Nice to Robert Biz Quiz. It's the Brutal Biz Quiz. Tsepo?
It's Pito Mboweni.
Wizard the Biz Quiz and 4,000 Rand coming your way. Tsepo, congratulations to you. Tito Mboweni, confirmed as finance minister again this week. At least it'll stop him from cooking. That's it from The Money Show. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll look forward to being in your company again on Monday. Till then, good night.